हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्नु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 84. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 33rd chapter describes the rasa dance, various amusements, playing in the water, and the conversation between Srila Sukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikit. Sardartha Darshini 10:33-1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the most expert in the knowledge of transcendental moods. In the company of the gopis, who are tightly bound to him by the ropes of affection, and totally dedicated to his service, the Lord expanded himself into numerous forms. The gopis became intoxicated with their enthusiasm to enjoy the rasa dance. And thus they began satisfying Krishna's senses by singing, dancing, and gesturing amorously. The sweet voices of the gopis filled all the directions. Even after Lord Krishna manifested himself in numerous forms, each gopi thought he was standing next to her alone. Gradually, the gopis became fatigued from the continuous dancing and singing, and each of them placed her arm on the shoulder of Krishna, standing beside her. Some gopis smelled and kissed Krishna's arm, which bore the fragrance of the lotus and was anointed with sandalwood paste. Others put Krishna's hands on their bodies, and yet others gave Krishna pleasure by embracing him lovingly. Lord Krishna, being the Supreme Absolute Truth, is the only actual enjoyer, an object of enjoyment. Although he is one without a second, he expands himself into many forms to increase his personal pastimes. Therefore, great scholars say that Krishna's Rasa-lila is like a child playing with his own reflection. Sri Krishna is self-satisfied and fully endowed with inconceivable transcendental opulences. When he exhibits such pastimes as the Rasa-lila, all living beings, from Brahma down to the blades of grass, become merged in the ocean of astonishment. When Maharaj Parikit heard the narration of Krishna's conjugal pastimes with the gopis, which superficially resemble the activities of lusty, wanton persons, he expressed a doubt to the great devotee Srila Sukadev Goswami. Sukadev dispelled this doubt by stating, "Since Krishna is the absolute enjoyer, such pastimes as these can never be contaminated by any fault. But if anyone other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead tries to enjoy such pastimes, he will suffer the same fate that someone other than Lord Rudra would suffer if he attempted to drink an ocean of poison. Moreover, even one who only thinks of imitating Krishna's Rasa-lila will certainly suffer misfortune. The Supreme Absolute Truth, Sri Krishna, is present within the hearts of all living entities as their indwelling witness. When, out of his mercy, exhibits his intimate pastimes to his devotees, these activities are never besmirched by mundane imperfection. Any living being who hears of the spontaneous loving attraction the gopis felt for Lord Krishna will have his desires for material sense gratification destroyed at the root and will develop his natural propensity for serving the Supreme Lord, the Spiritual Master, and the Lord's devotees." Shloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 21, the rasa dance. 22 to 25, Krishna and the gopis sport in the water and roam through the forest. 26 to 39, dispelling all doubts concerning the rasa-lila. Verses 1 to 21, the rasa dance. Sukadev Goswami said, "When the cowherd girls heard the Supreme Personality of Godhead speak these most charming words, they forgot their distress caused by separation from him." Because the whole idea is there must be an aspect of consideration. So in this, then Krishna has that aspect of humility, can be in the form of some joking words, can be a matter of the sincere interaction like this. Whatever is the form that it takes to remove the anger. So how he spoke, so nicely explaining everything so nicely and about his position, their position, his relationship with them. Then they were very, very happy with this, right? So then it cleared all their anger and other things. They forgot their distress caused by separation from him. Touching his transcendental limbs, they felt all their desires fulfilled. There on the Jamuna's bank, Lord Govinda then began the pastime of the rasa dance in the company of those jewels among women, the faithful gopis, who joyfully linked their arms together. The festive rasa dance commenced, with the gopis arrayed in a circle. Lord Krishna expanded himself and entered between each pair of gopis, and as the master of mystic power placed his arms around their necks, each gopi thought he was standing next to her alone. The demigods and their wives were overwhelmed with eagerness to witness the rasa dance, and they soon crowded the sky with their hundreds of celestial airplanes. Footnote 30. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 2-3 to Bhagavad Arkramichimala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Madhurima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Like just there, how absorbed they are in Krishna, how Krishna reciprocates with them. Right? This is then all that exchange of the sweetness of love. They have this desire to serve Krishna in this way, because it's about pleasing his senses, right? So when they see he is pleased, then they are happy. Does that make sense? So it's not about themselves. They're not trying to gain something for themselves. Like that. That's the uniqueness of this, as will be discussed later. Yes?
So then, not seeing anything else except for Krishna, who is next to each one of them, does that mean full absorption? They don't care for anything else?
Yes, that would be there, and also then Krishna would arrange it that way. So Yoga Maya would be there. But it's that they just want to serve Krishna, and so then if Krishna's there, they don't really worry about anything else. And so then Krishna arranges it so that that goes on, and each one has that opportunity. At the same time, they're not, looking around and seeing what others are doing. I can't remember the name of the book. One of the acharyas wrote... it's a summary, I think, of the 10th canto pastimes. And so, in the commentary at one place, he mentions that one of the qualities of a shudra is that when you're eating, they're always looking at everybody else's plate to check what they have. just in case they have something that they don't, who's got what, who's enjoying, they can't just... sit and be happy with what they have and just, enjoy that. They're always checking in case they're missing or this or who's got more, it's like that kind of a thing. So just the point that they're just with Krishna, focused on Krishna and not distracted by anything else, and that just shows that full dedication to Krishna. They're not worried about anything else. At this point, like before they were worried about, who's this other gopi and this and that. Now they're just absorbed in Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Each of these women thought that Krishna was standing with her. Though this was certainly so, he could also be seen everywhere. That was one of his dancing arts. In the middle of the circle, the son of Devaki stood embraced by the queen of Vrindavan, Sri Radha. At that time, hundreds of devatas such as Brahma appeared in airplanes. They were eager to see the dancing part of the Rasa Lila, not the confidential part. For being Dasya Bhaktas, they did not have qualification for the other parts.
Right.
Yes.
And how they had qualification even to see this part?
They're all good dancers and singers, so they came to see what's the best.
They also for Krishna Bhaktas.
Well, here we are listening to the story. We're going to even hear the confidential part.
Whether we see it or not, that's another question.
Yes, yes. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Kettle drums then resounded in the sky while flowers rained down and the chief Gandharvas and their wives sang Lord Krishna's spotless glories. A tumultuous sound arose from the armless, ankle bells, and waist bells of the gopis as they sported with their beloved Krishna in the circle of the rasa dance. In the midst of the dancing gopis, Lord Krishna appeared most brilliant, like an exquisite sapphire in the midst of golden ornaments. Right, because their complexion is golden, like that. So therefore, he looks like a jewel in a golden setting. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, though Krishna is the color of a blue sapphire, and mixing with the golden color of the gopis, he turned emerald color. Makaratmani. The word maha is used to indicate that the beauty was extraordinary. Some say that the word marakata also means sapphire. Thus the word maha makarato, meaning like an emerald, though actually being sapphire, is also seen in some versions of the text, right? Because he's known as the color of a sapphire, right? So that's a deep blue color, right? That's his color. But it's mentioned that he's the color like an emerald, like that. Because what happens when you mix blue and yellow?
Green.
You get green, right? So you'll see, it depends upon where it is, but in the traditional paintings, you'll see when Krishna's there, he has his halo. Radharani's there, she has hers. But if they're sitting together, the halo above them is green. Because his will be blue, hers will be yellow. So that's how the gopis will know, even if they can't see them, is they see what color is there. So if it's two separate colors, then they know that they're sitting separately. And if it's green, then they know that they're sitting together. So therefore it's correct in this. So whenever it mentions he looks like a green sapphire amongst the gopis, that's because he's with the gopis, and so therefore then the colors mix and you get that. You know, as he mentions, though actually being, he looks like an emerald, though, but he's actually like the color of the sapphire. Because that's just when they're together. Does that make sense? Yeah? No? Okay. Srila Vishwanath, okay. Yeah, so that's why some will mention the sapphire, some mention the emerald. Prabhupada in the Krishna book mentions the emerald. Sukadeva Goswami continued. As the gopis sang in praise of Krishna, their feet danced, their hands gestured, and their eyebrows moved with playful smiles. With their braids and belts tied tight, their waists bending, their faces perspiring, the garments on their breasts moving this way and that, and their earrings swinging on their cheeks, Lord Krishna's young consort shone like streaks of lightning in a mass of clouds. Right? Because he's dark like the cloud and they're bright like lightning. Like that. So then it looks like lightning and clouds. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, just as Krishna attained additional beauty in association with the gopis, so the gopis also attained additional beauty in association with Krishna. Right? Because Krishna, when his internal potency expands, then he becomes more beautiful. And the gopis, even though they're the most beautiful by interacting and serving Krishna, then they become, you know, much more blissful, so they even become more beautiful. The gopis were expert in exhibiting mudras, precise hand gestures that express feeling or convey meanings associated with the theme of a performance. Right? Because that's a very major thing in dancing, is all the mudra. Like that, because that expresses the feelings, the moods, the whole story can be told just by the mudra. Because the music is running, and it may have words or not, and the dancer is dancing, but you can tell what the story is because of the mudra. Thus, sometimes Krishna and the gopis would artistically move their interlocked arms together, and sometimes they would separate arms and exhibit mudras to act out the meaning of the songs they were singing. The word pada nyasahi indicates that the gopis artistically and gracefully placed the steps of their dancing feet in an enchanting way. And the words sa smriter bru vilasher indicate that the romantic movements of their eyebrows, smiling with love, were most charming to behold. Right? So they're doing everything just to please Krishna. Right? So that's the whole point. They know what is nice. They're doing that their best just to that Krishna will be happy. Sugadev Goswami continued, eager to enjoy conjugal love, the throats colored with various pigments. The gopis sang loudly and danced. They were overjoyed by Krishna's touch, and they sang songs that filled the entire universe. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. The necks of the gopis became tinted with red due to their desire to enjoy Krishna more and more. To satisfy them, Krishna began to clap his hands in time with their singing. Actually, the whole world is full of Krishna's singing, but it is appreciated in different ways by different kinds of living entities. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Yeya tamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. Bhagavad Gita 4.11. Krishna is dancing and every living entity is also dancing, but there is a difference between the dancing in the spiritual world and that in the material world. This is expressed by the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, who says that the master dancer is Krishna and everyone else is his servant. Everyone is trying to imitate Krishna's dancing. Those who are actually in Krishna consciousness respond rightly to the dancing of Krishna. They do not try to dance independently. But those in the material world try to imitate Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So here, Krishna is dancing, the gopis are dancing, but why are they dancing? They're dancing in connection with Krishna to please Krishna. So they have that mood of servant. He's the Supreme, they're the servant. But we see in the material world, then Krishna is dancing and everyone's imitating and trying to be Krishna. So it's not in that servant mood, so it doesn't take on the proper flavor. So that's the difficulty. Is that what you're saying? So there's a vast difference between these two kinds of activities. The living entities are dancing under the direction of Krishna's maya and are thinking that they are equal to Krishna, but this is not a fact. In Krishna consciousness, this misconception is absent. For a person in Krishna consciousness knows that Krishna is the Supreme Master and everyone else is his servant. One has to dance to please Krishna, not to imitate or attempt to become equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna's he's pervading everything in the universe, so everything's moving by his will. So therefore, that movement that's there, then we can either act in a subservient fashion to try to please Krishna with the engagement of that movement connected to him, or we can try to imitate and think that this movement is for ourselves. Right? So it's a very poetic way of saying how everything in the material world we're interacting with, then it's a matter of, do we see it connected to Krishna and trying to please Krishna by that action, or do we see it separate from Krishna? Right? So that's the difference. So we see here the rasa dance is perfect because it's perfectly in tune with pleasing Krishna. There's no other motive. Right? Before they had some pride or some other aspect, but that's all been removed now. Now it's functioning in its natural, perfect, pure state. The gopis wanted to please Krishna, and therefore, as Krishna sang, they responded and encouraged him by saying, "Well done, well done." Sometimes he presented beautiful music for his pleasure, and he responded by praising their singing. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. Having described the prominent position of the gopis dancing because of great joy, now the prominence of singing is described. While dancing, they sang. This shows their skill in dancing since they could also sing at the same time. The goal of singing and dancing was Krishna's pleasure, rati priyaha, right? So you have to be so good that you can sing nicely and dance nicely, because each one, generally you see most people do one or the other. They don't do both, especially this singing, you know? Because, you know, the technical points and all these things like that. But they could do it where it's not that they're just singing along. It's actually they're fully singing. So to be able to do that, the dancing, the mudras, the singing, that just shows how expert they were. Right? That's just all the, you know, the transcendental happiness to serve Krishna. Like, you know, how you say? Like previously, how you say? You know, in the Western that the musicians didn't need music videos because they actually could sing and dance at the same time. And nowadays they can't do both, so they have to make a video. Right? Yeah. The goal of singing and dancing was Krishna's pleasure, Rati Priyaha. One should not fear that they would become tired by singing and dancing, for they were overjoyed by the touch of Krishna. That was the only cause of their dancing. Their singing was so loud it spread over the universe, or the universe became filled with their spontaneous ragas, which made the universe prone to singing as well. The scriptures on music say that the gopis' raga number 16,000. Sangeet Sar says, Tanvanta eva ragha syur yavato jiva jatayaha teshu sho dasa sahasri pura gopi krita vara. There are as many musical ragas as there are species of life. Among these ragas, 16,000 principal ones were performed by the gopis previously. So, you know, so for Krishna, then he has all these different things. So the ragas for all the different species of life. So that means there's 8,400,000. Means there'll be more, but that's you know, enough that it's good enough, right? So we can't complain about that, right? And so, and of those, then 16,000 will be prominent, right? Because 8,400,000, then the difference in raga between your cold flu, you know, germ and your, you know, how you say, your local flu germ, there'll be some slight difference, right? Because one will have more of a cooling, one will be warm. And then between, let's say, that flu and a different flu, then there'll be a difference. But it'll be so subtle that only someone like Krishna, you know, would be able to appreciate. So, therefore, 16,000 then are prominent. Right? So, comfortable with that? You know, in South India, the Mela cart, they use 72. And after that, your head cracks. And I think at one time, somebody documented about 5,000. I think there's a book using the Mela cart system that 5,000 ragas are documented. You know, and that's, I think, the biggest book in that area. You know, in north, then the ragas, then I think, are 42. Right? That's the main that Narad Muni gave. And then before that, you had the jatis, which are the combinations of notes on which then all things could be expressed. So there's 18 of them. But those are Vedic, and they're very, very difficult because technically there's hardly any rules on them, so people don't actually know how to use them. You know, so the Samaveda, that will be in jatis. So then from that, the Narad Muni seeing the difficulty of people being able to appreciate and use it, then he gave the ragas like that. So he gave that raga ragini system that's attributed to him. Mm-hmm. So 16,000 is quite good then. So all ragas then come from this. That's why it's considered this is happening at midnight. Therefore, according to the Vedic tradition, then the what they call in North coffee rag, C K A F I
coffee. Coffee.
Yes, not the.
Not the coffee.
Not the stuff that South Indians can't function without drinking. Yeah. Yeah. So, what do you say? That's considered the core rag. From there, all other ragas are expanding. That's why then at midnight it's considered you can sing any raga. That's why they generally have musical performances at night. Because then at that time you could use any rag. Because otherwise in the day, then they expect you to play the rag for that time of the day. But when at night, then any rag can go. And that, though in the contemporary music, then they consider the morning rag to be the basic rag, because they're taking it that, you know, the day starts, so you have the morning rag, mm-hmm. like we sing at Mangalartik. And then from there, then it develops, and then you get the whole 24 hours. Mm-hmm. But as we hear, Sangeet Sar then points out, the gopis were singing all the ragas, so that's actually the point. So that interaction between Radha and Krishna, that's the basis of all ragas. Well, the contemporary Vaishnavas will know that, but in general, they'll attribute it back to Shiva and Parvati, which is well enough, seeing that they're materialists, and so they're under their control, so then that's as far back as they can get. But actually, they originally come from Radha and Krishna. Right? And then all the dance steps, that creates all the, you know, the beats. All the various beats that you use in music, that comes from their dance. So their singing is all the ragas, and their dancing is all the meters. So, yes?
So every species having their own raga means they created by that sound?
It just means that it perfectly expresses the flavor of that. You know, so some of them, like a badger, that might be a bit Tchaikovsky-ish, but, you know, like that. But you know, but it's all them, because every species has a mood. You know, like dogs are a general mood, or a bird is, like, let's say, if you can relate and deal with a dog, you know, a dog, you'll find you can basically relate to any dog, because there's a dog mood. And if you can relate with the dog mood with one dog, all other dogs can understand that. They can tell you can deal, you know how to, you know, speak dog, right? So then they're cool. Does that make sense? So it's like that with any animal. You can deal with one of them, you can deal with all of them. I mean, you know, of course, individuality, but the basic principle is that you can deal. Because there's one general mood. Does that make sense? And then there'll be all the, you know, what you can do with the raga, so that would most likely have all the variety of what that animal and that mood or that species of life has. So there might be, you know, like I said, the germ may not be too much of a developed raga or something, but, you know. Like that. I'm not sure if they have one note ragas or something, but you know, generally 5, 6, and 7. So.
So the classical dancing of India is also a derivation from this.
Yes, that's what we said. Yes, it means all that comes from. So all these things come from here. The beats, the ragas, the movements, they're all coming out of this. Because you see, is in the classical sense. Then before, as all music was Drupad, and from that's what everything was done for dancing and music and all that. And basically, before Sahajan, or Sajahan, whatever, then basically all the Drupads were on Radha and Krishna. But with him, because he being who he was, you know, so then, The Mughals, they appreciated the music, that's why they all knew it and used it and everything in the court, because it was best. But at the same time, by his time, then it was, they weren't so interested in Radha and Krishna. So that's when they just dropped the song and just sang music without any words. Yeah. No, even in the regular thing, just the akar, they were just two. So, like now, when you hear classical musicians, most of the time they present a raga, it's just akar. They don't use songs. But previously, the standard was it was always a song. Like
those
that.
Who use the songs are very few.
Sorry?
Those who use the songs and teach the students, they are very few now, but they use Radha Krishna songs only compulsory.
Yeah. But before it was the standard.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, and so now they do that. So then they adjusted. So before it was that they were able to do. So it was all about Radha and Krishna. So even though you have the Mughal king, you know, listening to a performance, you know, being performed by a Mughal musician, and they're singing about Radha and Krishna. But, you know. So that went on for, how you say, you know, through Akbar. After Akbar, then they started to adjust things.
Piety ran out.
Their
piety ran out.
Yes, their piety ran out.
Even now, most of the main ragas, the Radha Krishna songs, are available.
Yes, Yes, like that. But if you see, if they do use, it's generally always that. But many don't. What to do? Sukadeva Goswami continued. One gopi, joining Lord Mukunda in his singing, sang pure melodious tones that rose harmoniously above his. Krishna was pleased and showed great appreciation for her performance, saying, "Excellent, excellent." Then another gopi repeated the same melody, but in a special metrical pattern, and Krishna praised her also. Okay. So basically, you're going to have is that you have the tune that you're using, but then it's also by the meter. And it sounds completely different. Like, let's say, very few use it like that. Before it was a little bit more. Achyutananda would use it in the Bengali bhajans. You hear it, you hear the more traditional. Like in, let's say, a song like Nittai Pada Kamala. There's four verses. They'll sing each of the four in a different meter. Like that. Does that make sense? So in Drupad, you can have one tune and then sing it in different meters. You can use one meter, use different aspects or adjustments in the tune, or you can combine that. So that's the kind of thing that you're dealing with here. Does that make sense? So that's why to be able to do those things. Like you see, Indra, he'll be singing the tune in the regular, then he'll go to very long, and then he'll go to, half. You know, he'll double it, then he'll go to half. Even though it's the same tune, it sounds different. You know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. It sounds different. So that's the thing, you're changing the meter. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The swaras are born from the shrutis, right? So there's 22 shrutis. So that means quarter notes, because eighth notes you can't tell the difference, right? So quarter note. So when someone does vibrato, that's a half note movement. But then, what's it called? Undulan, I think. It's a quarter note moving. So that's that. You only see that in the Vedic music. They'll just use that just a slight, So each of these 22 shrutis, they each have a particular mood and a flavor. So the raga is the combination of those particular moods. So you have 22 moods, then you have 7 notes that'll pick from these. Right, so then with that, then there'll be 7, what do you call it? Four different shrutis for sa, 3 for re, 2 for ga, 4, 3, 2. Then 4 for ma, 4 for pa, 3 for da, and 2 for ni. That's in sa grama. When you adjust it to ga grama or ma grama, means you shift it over. So then those numbers shift over. So instead of there being 4 for sa, then there'll be either 3 or 2. Like that. So that's where the difficulty comes in. So what we're used to is just the sa grama. It's just only the sa with its notes like that. So then you have the 7 notes, and then they will be what your song will be made of. So you have your natural, their original state, so that you know what they are. And then after that, then they have their adjustments to just bring out the various flavors. These 7 swaras, Saja, Rishabha, Gandhara, Madhyama, Paschama, Daivata, and Nishada, correspond to the cries of the peacock, Chataka, goat, crane, cuckoo, stork. In other versions, instead of stork is frog and elephant. Right? So, because all of these, they always make the same sound. So, if you've heard these things, you know them, there's something you can remember. Like the peacock, then you know that sound. So then you can start sa from there. Like that. You understand? So that's how it works. Because they always make the, goats, they all make the same sound. It's the same note. Does that make sense? Some will use a bull, I think, for Nishada. like that. You know, and here another version they use a frog. They always make the same sound. You understand? If you think about it, it's always the same because it corresponds to these notes. So that way you can know what's perfect pitch just by this. You don't need these machines and stuff. Because you've heard it, it's there. It's always the same. So therefore you just remember that, you know the note. And then from that, then you can get your variations. Because if you know that there's four notes within sa, so therefore then the quarter notes that'll be within that range, off of the first one of the cry of the peacock. Does that make sense? The jatis arising from the arrangements of the swaras are 18. Jatis are the source of ragas. These jatis are of two types, I guess, pure and distorted. The Saja, Rishabha, Gandhara, Madhyama, Paschama, Daivata, and Nishada jatis are called pure. When these are changed, they are called distorted, vikrita. Right, so then you have, off of them, is that there'll be a jati just off of sa. That's all about sa, bringing out all the various aspects of sa and all the other notes connected to that. And then you'll go to re, then that will be the same thing. Does that make sense? So that's, so that's then, and so all the combinations you can get from that will be in the jatis. So ragas come from that. Okay. Being the most excellent singers, the gopis sang only in pure form, right? So they were singing 16,000 ragas based off of these eight or seven jatis that are considered pure, right? So then 11 will be mixed, or vikrit, it means distorted. In an outstanding manner, one gopi performed alap, improvisation. Seeing the gopi sing so skillfully, Krishna honored her by giving his yellow cloth and other things. It should be understood that this gopi was Vishakha, because she's the best at this thing. Of course, Radharani's the best, but then she will, you know, make the nice arrangements. She trains the others. The alap of one song was performed with dhruvatal, with great expertise. Krishna honored her with ornaments like rings, other ornaments and garlands. Revealing even more wonderful qualities, this person could only be Lalita. Seeing, so that was, you know, so the one brought out just the alap was so good, but the other one brought out this very, very amazing tal, and various things you can do with the tals. You know, it means the meter. And so that was Lalita, right? She's very expert in these things. Seeing that the gopis were reluctant to bring the ragas and raginis they sung to even greater levels of beauty, Radha herself then sang, right? Because they were going up to a particular point, but they didn't want to go more, you know, I guess out of shyness or like that. So then Radharani then took it to the next level. From this we can understand that among all the gopis, she was endowed with most excellent and attractive of all qualities, because she knows all the things to its completeness. So whatever Krishna knows, she knows. And then the others know, you know, various proportions of what she knows. So Lalita and Vishakha will know the most. So they'll be the best singers of everyone. Sukadeva Goswami continued. When one gopi grew tired from the rasa dance, she turned to Krishna, standing at her side, holding a baton and grasping his shoulder with her arm. The dancing had loosened her bracelets and the flowers in her hair. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, after indicating Lalita and Vishakha through their excellent qualities of singing and dancing, the most prominent Sri Radha has indicated through a description of her good fortune. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Right, so sometimes you see as if they're going just on and in social in position, then they'll start from the top and come down. And then sometimes in the show, they'll go like this, they'll go up. Sukadeva Goswami continued, upon the shoulder of one gopi, Krishna placed his arm, whose natural boot lotus fragrance was mixed with that of the sandalwood pulp anointing it. As the gopi relished that fragrance, her bodily hair stood on end in jubilation, and she kissed his arm. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, This verse indicates Shyamala by similarity to the gopi's action in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.32.4. She came up and put her arm around Krishna, so then she's appreciating that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Sukadeva Goswami continued. Next to Krishna's cheek, one gopi put her own, beautified by the effulgence of her earrings, which glittered as she danced. Krishna then carefully gave her the betel nut he was chewing. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, because of the similar description of the gopi who was given his chewed betel nut, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.32.5, the gopi described in this verse must be Shaibya. She placed her cheek on Krishna's on the pretext of being tired from dancing. Sukadeva Goswami continued, another gopi became fatigued as she danced and sang, the bells on her ankles and waist tinkling. So she placed upon her breast the comforting lotus hand of Lord Achyuta, who was standing by her side. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, one gopi singing and dancing, holding Krishna's hand, placing it on her breast. In the last chapter, two gopis are mentioned who held Krishna's hand. Chandravali held Krishna's hand in hers, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.32.4. Padma held Krishna's feet on her breast, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.32.5. Though there is a difference between holding Krishna's hands and feet, in both cases the gopis held the hands or feet on her breast to relieve herself of the love pains in her breast. So the purpose of the action is the same. Thus the present verse can also refer to Padma. Though the eighth gopi, Bhadra, is not mentioned here, she is mentioned in the Vishnu Purana. So does that make sense? So we mentioned that she's not the last one of them wasn't mentioned because of, I think, of her neutral position.
Yeah, she's neutral.
Because Shyamala is neutral, but she's favorable to, or independent, but favorable to Radharani, while Bhadra is independent, but neutral.
Probably
all the Puranas. Basically, most all the main pastimes that are there, all the Puranas describe. Now, to what degree and all that? So we see here that the Bhagavatam will give so much nice detail and all that. But the only one is the Ritrasura. That's the only one that's not told in any of the other Puranas except Bhagavatam. So that's why you can identify Bhagavatam as the Purana with the story of Ritrasura. Then you know it's Bhagavatam. Because all the others then will have the common churning of the milk ocean and all these different, the 10 avatars. They're all standard because they follow the same pattern. But they're different discussions. So therefore then the subject matter will come out slightly different, with slightly different flavor. So that's what the different Puranas are bringing out. That makes sense? Different aspect of the same thing. It's just like you tell the story and each time the fish gets bigger, that kind of thing. So, yeah, a different angle and things like that. So it's just that, while you were bringing in that Merlin, then in one of the stories the whole Japanese army was chasing you. It doesn't come out in all the stories, just in, certain ones. So like that, in the 18 Puranas, then different aspects will come out. Does that make sense? It's just like a Nisringa Purana. When Krishna, when Prahlad is thrown off of the cliff at Simhachala, right by Hiranyakashipu's henchmen, right? Then when he's falling there, then Krishna caught him. But he caught him, so it's Nisringadeva is protecting him, right? But the best way if you want to pick something up is as a boar. So Nisringadeva took the form of a boar to catch Prahlad. Right, so you hear about this in the Sringa Purana. The other Puranas don't bring out that detail. They'll bring out other details. Does that make sense? So like that, they'll go. So the deity is still there. Varaha Nisringa. He's Nisringa Dev in the form of Varaha Dev. But unless you go there on the specific day, he's always covered in sandalwood paste. So you just see like a linga there.
So Akshaytritiya that he's revealed in his
origin
form.
Akshaytritiya is when they open.
Yeah.
The hottest day of the year. Oh my God. It's okay. Dangerous. <right? laughs> That is the most auspicious, yeah. Because it said if they don't keep him covered in sandalwood paste, he's so angry at Hiranyakashipu that he'll burn up the universe. So they, as a universal duty, if they keep him covered. Because it says he's solid covered, and then they put a little bit more every day. It's not that they put a little bit and slowly it turns. No, they just cover him and then put a little bit and maintain it. Sukadev Goswami continued, having attained as their intimate lover, Lord Achyuta, the exclusive consort of the goddess of fortune, the gopis enjoyed great pleasure. They sang his glories as he held their necks with his arms. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, in this way, other gopis also, according to their individual inclinations, enjoyed with Krishna. Right? So, there's, as we mentioned, there's millions of gopis, 16,000 are prominent, 16,108 are prominent, of that 108 are prominent, of that 8 are prominent. So then in the Bhagavatam here, it only gives the detail of those 8. But of the 8, it actually only describes 7. Sukadev Goswami continued, enchanting the beauty. Enchanting the beauty of the gopis' faces were the lotus flowers behind their ears, the locks of hair decorating their cheeks, and drops of perspiration. The reverberation of their armlets and ankle bells made a loud musical sound, and their chaplets scattered. Thus, the gopis danced with the Supreme Lord in the arena of the Rasa dance as swarms of bees sang in accompaniment. In this way, Lord Krishna, the original Lord Narayana, master of the goddess of fortune, took pleasure in the company of the young women of Raja by embracing them, caressing them, and glancing lovingly at them as he smiled his broadly playful smiles. It was just as if a child were playing with his own reflection. Footnote 31. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 16 to Vaga Akramichimala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa. Rasa Madhuri Ma, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So all these nice arrangements, all these wonderful things just being done to please Krishna. That's their only purpose. Right? And then this point is being made about Krishna means just as if a child were playing with his own reflection and own reflection, like a small child, comes up to the mirror, sees their reflection, and they touch and that, and it's kind of like fun to, you put your hand and you do all the different things like that. So that's basically what we're dealing with here, because Krishna, his internal potency, which is non-different from him, he's interacting with that potency. It's interacting with himself. Right? But there's a difference, just like there's a mirror. It's different. That's the flavor. It's you, but it's different. That's the taste. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments, Lord Krishna alone is the supreme absolute truth, and his potencies are unlimited. All these potencies taking personal forms engage Lord Krishna in his pastimes. Just as the opulent manifestation of his one supreme transcendental potency manifests all the countless potencies of the Lord, so in the Rasa dance, Krishna manifests himself as many times as there are various potencies represented by the gopis. Everything is Krishna, but by his desire, his spiritual energy, Yoga Maya, manifests the gopis. When his internal potency, Yoga Maya, thus produces such pastimes for the enhancement of his transcendental emotions, it is just like a young boy playing with his own reflection. But since these pastimes are created by his spiritual potency, they are eternal and self-manifesting. Right? So it's real. It's just, it's like how else to give the understanding. But the point is these energies are there. He has unlimited energies. And then by Yoga Maya, they're manifest, and then Krishna interacts with each one of them. He expands to interact with each one. And so that pleasure that he gains from that, then that's the whole point. Right? So even though he's one, he's still the manifestation of his energies is eternal. See? So all this is being brought out so that no one gets distracted that, oh, Krishna is just enjoying, what is this? This is nonsense. Because that'll be brought up at the end of the verse, at the end of the chapter. Sukadev Goswami continued, why Krishna is doing it, why can't I do it? Right? Yeah, you go lift Govardhan also, and no problem. Sukadev Goswami continued, their senses overwhelmed by the joy of having his physical association, the gopis could not prevent their hair their dresses and the clothes covering their breasts from becoming disheveled, their garlands and ornaments scattered. O hero of the Kuru dynasty, the wives of the demigods, observing Krishna's playful activities from their airplanes, were entranced and became agitated with lust. Indeed, even the moon and his entourage, the stars, became astonished. Expanding himself as many times as there were cowherd women to associate with, the Supreme Lord, though self-satisfied, playfully enjoyed their company. Footnote 32. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 29 to the Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Madhuri Ma, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So Krishna, at his pleasure, then he's doing this, that sweetness of interacting with the gopis. They are performing activities to please him, and he expands and reciprocates that. So that's that specialness of the sweetness, how Krishna interacts. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, then Krishna joined with each gopi privately in a separate grove. He expanded himself into as many forms as there were gopis. Though he is self-satisfied, Atmarama, he joined with the gopis. So this is the part that the demigods aren't seeing. Right? They're seeing just the dance itself. Like that, and appreciating just how expert, because they're the most expert in the universe at music. Gandharvas, right? That's their thing, is music. So if that's what you mainly do on a universal level, you're good. But Krishna's better, and the gopis are better. So they can see the origin of all of their knowledge, and they can dance, they can do all these things. They're the best. So they appreciate. Right? Sukadeva Goswami continued, seeing that the gopis were fatigued from conjugal enjoyment, my dear king, merciful Krishna lovingly wiped their faces with his comforting hands. The gopis honored their hero with smiling glances, sweetened by the beauty of their cheeks and the effulgence of their curly locks and glittering golden earrings. Overjoyed from the touch of his fingernails, they chanted the glories of his all-auspicious transcendental pastimes. Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, the overjoyed gopis produce joy in Krishna in three ways, by their beauty, their effulgent cheeks, their emotions, smiling glances, and by glorifying him, they sang about his activities. So in all these things. So we have the form of it, the attitude of it, and then the glorification. Does that make sense? So therefore, we're performing activities, right? And with that, we're doing the activity to please Krishna. We have the proper attitude to make it favorable to Krishna. And we're always chanting Krishna's glories. So the gopis give the perfect formula. Right? So that's what we're doing, not out dancing in the moonlight. Right? Verses 22 to 25. Krishna and the gopis sport in the water and roam through the forest. Sukadeva Goswami continues, Lord Krishna's garland had been crushed during his conjugal dalliance with the gopis and colored vermilion by the kumkum powder on their breasts. To dispel the fatigue of the gopis, Krishna entered the water of the Jamuna, followed swiftly by bees who were singing like the best of the Gandharvas. He appeared like a lordly elephant, right? Because bees follow nice smell. Right? Because nice smell comes from flowers, right? Because from the earth, then the nice fragrance of the earth comes out as flowers. Right? So then the bees follow the flowers to get the honey there. Now Krishna himself smells so beautiful. Right? He's just natural smell. Then on top of that, you have flowers and sandalwood paste and other kinds of that. So when we say sandalwood paste, that's called gandha. That means there's other things mixed in it. You know, musk or camphor, aguru, or all these different things. So if you put all that together, then, you know, you got, bee catnip. You know, it's just like, you know, they're completely intoxicated and all buzzing around and singing and like that. They're happy, right? He appeared like a lordly elephant, entering the water to relax in the company of his consorts. Indeed, the Lord had transgressed all worldly and Vedic morality, just as a powerful elephant might break the dikes in a paddy field. My dear king, in the water, Krishna found himself splashed on all sides by the laughing gopis, who looked at him with love. Right? He said, why are the dikes there in the paddy field? Right? To control the water. Right? But when the elephant moves through, then they don't last very well. Like that. So the point is Krishna, he is the purpose of all that controlling. He is rasa. So we follow the rules to control rasa so that we can engage it in Krishna's service. Avoid material rasa and try to develop the proper mood of serving Krishna. So we need the dikes to control it. Therefore the rules and regulations of the scriptures. Right? The recommendations. But for Krishna, he is rasa. So it doesn't matter how it's flowing. There's no restriction for Krishna. Does that make sense? My dear king, in the water, Krishna found himself being splashed on all sides by the laughing gopis, who looked at him with love. Right? So they're performing an activity, but it's being done with affection. That's why you have to be Krishna conscious, but favorably. It's not just enough to be Krishna conscious, because Shishupal was also Krishna conscious. Right? But here is their Gacha Krishna, and lovingly, they're performing activities, and that we see so that all that is there together. The proper activity, the proper attitude for Krishna's pleasure. Right? As the demigods worshipped him by showering flowers from their airplanes, the self-satisfied Lord took pleasure in playing like the king of the elephants. Then the Lord strolled through a small forest on the bank of the Jamuna. This forest was filled to its limit with breezes, carrying the fragrance of all the flowers growing on land and in the water. So the maximum amount of breeze that could be in the forest, carrying the maximum amount of fragrances from any flower anywhere and on the land or on the water, then it was there. What Chaitanya Maharaj would point out is that the breeze, the servant to Krishna, in coming, because the breeze will be cooling and nice, so he's performing his activities. So then by the breeze coming, then that will be very much appreciated. But first it will go over flowers and that first to get a nice fragrance before blowing on Krishna. Yeah. Followed by his entourage of bees and beautiful women, Lord Krishna appeared like an intoxicated elephant with his she-elephants. Right, so the bees are still buzzing around like that. In Calcutta Temple, I don't know if you still have it, but the deity room has the back window is directly open to the outside. And so then in the morning when they put on the new garlands and all that, if you come back a little bit later, then you'd see all these bees buzzing around the garlands, you know, all day like that. You still get that?
Backside is dressing room.
Oh, they closed it.
Combined the guest house and the...
Oh, okay. That was always a nice thing, because you hear about this, but you don't necessarily see that. At least in Calcutta, Radha Govinda would manifest that on a daily basis.
5 years before, the Prabhupada's garland, we used to see. Now the garlands are not so...
not so much smell. Okay.
Those bees are attracted.
So no bees are attracted, yeah. What to do. But before, they would actually come. You'd see them. Like that. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, after enjoying in the water and after drying their bodies, dressing in clothing and ornaments supplied by the Vana Devatas, they entered countless groves on the bank of the Jamuna for special pastimes. Right, so Vrinda Devi and her assistants and all that, then from the forest, they provide all these things for their pastimes. So any musical instruments needed, any like this clothes, any food, anything that's required for the pastimes of Radha Krishna and the gopis, then they provide all this. So it's just so then it's not dependent upon that they have to bring it from Vrindavan. You know, they have to schlep it out there every time. You know, gopi, she can't even get herself dressed properly, let alone take an extra set of clothes, right? You know, so yeah. So it's all arranged by Yogamaya. Sugadev Goswami continued, Although the gopis were firmly attached to Lord Krishna, whose desires are always fulfilled, the Lord was not internally affected by any mundane sex desire. Still, to perform his pastimes, the Lord took advantage of all those moonlit autumn nights, which inspire poetic descriptions of transcendental affairs. Footnote 33. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 25 to Bhagavad Arkramachimala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Madhuri Ma, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So they're fully absorbed in Krishna. It has no mundane flavor. So that's why there's sweetness in it. It doesn't have the, you know, difficulties that you have in the mundane. Like that. Yeah, because in the mundane, is so it's presented as its pleasure, it actually creates a pain. Because it actually doesn't have anything in connection to do with the living entity. While here, then, their interaction with Krishna does. And so, therefore it has the perfect flavor. So, therefore, it has the sweetness. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, you know, because it means we may say, no, but there's sweetness here. We call it that. But in actuality, it's not. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, sex desires especially excited in the autumn season. But the wonderful thing about Krishna's association with the gopis is that there was no question of sex desire. It was, as stated, clearly stated in the Bhagavat description by Sukadeva Goswami, avaruddha saurata, the sex impulse was completely controlled. There is a distinction between Lord Krishna's dancing with the gopis and the ordinary dancing of living entities within the material world. Good, yes.
Somehow, mundane poets, they always describe springtime for that time. So, why is your problem mentioning autumn?
Because in the Vedic, it's the autumn. I mean, it's that. Yeah. Because the autumn, because it's after the rains, so then the, you know, everything's nice and green and lush. The weather's still pleasant and warm, like that. And so, you know, the prosperity of everything's very great. So that's what it is. In the West, then after a freezing cold winter, it's the first time that, you know, like you can, you know, kind of become a little human again. And so then they will glorify the spring. Not that the spring is not there, but you see the main rasa is the fall, the autumn. They also have rasa then. I mean, they have all year, but there's also, I think, a date for the spring rasa then. But it's not considered, it's not the Maharas. Okay. Like that. Because in the spring, it gets hot. Like Kartik. Is Kartik nice or not? The weather? Yeah. Like that. But at Gaur Purnima? Hot. Yeah. It means that if you're on, you know, in Iceland, yeah, spring would be the time. Right? Yeah. There is a distinction between Lord Krishna's dancing with the gopis and the ordinary dancing of living entities within the material world. His living entities dancing in the material world, even though they're trying to enjoy what's there, not serve Krishna. So the gopis are dancing with Krishna, but trying to please Krishna. But the living entities in the material world are dancing with Krishna, but not to please Krishna. They're trying to be Krishna. So it doesn't have the same effect. Verses 26 to 39. Dispelling all doubts concerning the Rasa Lila. Maharaj Purkit said, O Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of the universe, has descended to this earth along with his plenary portion to destroy irreligion and reestablish religious principles. Indeed, he is the original speaker, follower, and guardian of moral laws. How then could he have violated them by touching other men's wives? O faithful upholder of vows, please destroy our doubts by explaining to us what purpose the self-satisfied Lord of the Yadus had in mind when he behaved so contemptibly. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, the Rasa Leela consists of attracting the gopis with the flute, conversations, disappearance with Radha, his reappearance, spreading their cloth for a seat, asking a question and receiving an answer, dancing in joy, private affairs, playing in the water and playing in the forest. Right, so that's the whole, you could say, overview of the pastimes that happened that in that evening. When Sukadeva Goswami described the rasa pastimes with great joy on answering a question, Prickett also became joyful on hearing it. He did not find fault with it, since that would produce distaste. In three verses, he mercifully raises a question, as if doubting, for the benefit of others who have doubts. The first two verses are together as one statement. The Lord appears in order to establish lost dharma or protect what is current. Not only that, he comes in order to uproot a dharma with all its subtle desires. Otherwise, establishing dharma would be incomplete. The word he indicates this is well known. Because to establish dharma means you have to uproot what is adharma. Because otherwise, how do you deal with the both? Right? So you maintain what dharma is there. That should be going on. But you reestablish the dharma that's lost. How do you do that? By uprooting the adharma that's there. Right? So you maintain what's there. That's dharma. You get rid of what's there. That's adharma. And then you establish by that what's, you know, previously was established. Does that make sense? Yes.
We have just the 9 cantos as an introduction to the 10th canto. And then in the 10th canto we have 5 chapters. And then within 5 chapters, the 4 chapters, you know, introduce the main rasa. But in the rasa, it's a very short portion of the whole thing. It's like, you know, it's over. So why it is like that?
It's a matter of, like, taste or realization. So, for that itself can keep then self-realized souls busy for a long time. But for us, it's just, that's it. It's some verses and it's done. But the point is just those things of what can be done, what goes on in that, all the variety that's there, then that's appreciated. You see the acharyas. They can bring it down to who's there, who's doing what. So it's just a matter of, as one gets purified, then these things stick more in the mind. Right? They don't have there's no distraction, no disturbance in that. Because unless it's seen or appreciated on the transcendental platform, then it can be distracting. So by hearing this in this form, how it's given with the comments of the acharyas, then all the dirt within the heart or one's attraction to material sense gratification then is uprooted. Right? Then one can appreciate. Does that make sense? It means the girl has done something all day. But, you know, as she was, opened her locker and as she's like that and she heard the sound and she looked, you know, around the door of her locker and then at that time then their eyes met. Like that. Now, for the next so many days, how many activities of that 24 hours is she going to remember? Right? Not so much. What's she going to remember? That one moment. So therefore, that's the point, is those on that natural level of attraction to Krishna, then that itself can keep you busy forever. You know, so anything can keep you busy, but that'll keep them busy. For us, it doesn't keep us busy because it's only the words that are there, then we get that kind of experience. As soon as the words stop, it stops. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
I'm just thinking, how can we expand that kind of meditation?
By appreciating all these points that are being made, how it's going here. So, if we appreciate to this, to the degree we appreciate this, then that to that degree we see that everything else is taken care of. Like you can see, as they just, the comments by the acharyas and all this go for pages. So as the heart gets purified, it will naturally happen. It's not something that there's a system to make it happen. It's like rag, bhakti. It's not something you can do to make it happen, other than following the process that's recommended by the acharya. So in the same way, it's not a separate system. You just are absorbing yourself in always hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, and performing our activities. And then these things will come. But, of course, there has to be the desire, but we get that desire by the association. Right? Yeah, so instead of looking at it, why is it so short, it'll be more of, why is it that, you know, even though we've heard these wonderful things, and Prigat Maharaj is greatly appreciating and all that, and all the acharyas are appreciating, but we don't have that appreciation. You know, it's like the Lord Chaitanya, that verse, Nam Namakadi Bahudanya Jasarva Shakti, that all this is there, is so wonderful, but I have no taste. So that's the actual problem. Not the volume, it's the matter of taste.
Can you say that on our level we are dependent on things from the outside to get experience, and on the much higher level those things are just developing inside?
Means the outside means the outside is an udipan, but for us it's not. It's just a story. So it's there, it's new, especially if it's new and we haven't heard it before, then we find more of a taste.
But also I meant like if we are an association of those who have taste,
right,
or spiritual master or something,
right,
you get kind of the semblance of this taste,
yes,
when you're near it.
Yes.
The way it's done, and everything is done.
No, I mean he said that eternally is there, it's just because we have other interests, so they take prominence.
The experience is there.
No, it's there, it's just we're not remembering it because we're busy remembering other things. But whenever an opportunity comes up to remember again, then it continues from where it left off. So if we were inspired, then next time it continues, it'll continue from that inspired position. It won't start somewhere else. Does that make sense? So that's why the whole idea of always keeping yourself in good association, right? Either by physically being there, by hearing the instructions, by things like that. So it's a constant thing. Like we said before, is that it was standard in the temples that either they read Krishna book as a group just before going to sleep, or individually, or like this. And so that was just to always be reminded of Krishna. You know, because what you go to bed thinking is generally what you wake up in the morning with. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is it primarily based upon what you find in the descriptions in the other Puranas, or is it more based on your personal realization?
What does it matter? Because if they don't realize, how would they see it? If you don't have some understanding, let's say you walk into someone's house and it's very nicely arranged. You know, the textures, the colors, the balance, everything like that. But can you appreciate that if you don't have some knowledge about that? Yes, but I'm saying like, you know, the kid running in with their baseball bat, does he appreciate? No. Like that. Other than the big space, it's bigger space than in his bedroom, so he can hit the ball farther. You know. Is that so the more you understand, the more you can appreciate. So for them to be able to tell the mood of something, of a gopi, and what she's doing and all that, then that means they have to appreciate something. You know what I'm saying? So, but for us, does it matter? Yes, so therefore then what's, you know what I'm saying? It's not an area of need because we wouldn't understand it anyway. You know what I'm saying? You know, we're just trying to get our lemon juice stand to run like that, and you know, we're discussing the difference between, you know, yeah, but this guy's got, you know, he's got, you know, $72 billion, you know, dollars and this and that. Yeah, but that's nothing. This other guy, he was up to 90 billion and all that, though in the morning, yeah, he was down to 60. What does it matter? You know, we're just trying to, you know, pay off our, you know, see that we get enough lemons. As lemon has, how you say, life has given us lemons, so we're making lemon juice. And but we're still not able to sell it because people just go, it's lemon juice, come on, you know. Does that make sense? So therefore, for the acharyas, whether it is there, they are there in the pastime and they're simply telling you what's going on. It's their realization of the pastime because of their absorption in it and by the mercy of the Lord. Whether it's just they're so expert in rasa and this and that from all the shastras and they can put it together and they know so many shastras and they somehow know to work this out. Technically doesn't matter to us. The point is they're letting us know what the reality is. Because that's what's going on. Does this make sense? And so for that, then we'll follow in the footsteps. Does that make sense? But as we understand, then, being on the transcendental platform, they must be there. So if we want to be there, then we have to follow the moods that they give us. Then only we can be there. Otherwise, I say, in Bengali they say, Habina. Means it's not happening. Yeah, we'll have to stop here and continue after the break. Yeah, we don't give enough time to the sponsors, then, you know, things don't go well.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.